John Colescott from Closed End Fund Advisors is here, and we're seeing how his forecast for 2024 actually turned out. This is The Navigator. Welcome to The Navigator, where we talk about all-weather active investing and plotting a course to financial success with the help of Closed End Funds. The Navigator is brought to you by the Active Investment Company Alliance, a unique industry organization representing all facets of the closed-end fund industry, from users and investors to fund sponsors and creators. If you're looking for excellence beyond indexing, the Navigator will point you in the right direction. And today, well, we're looking at the directions John Colescott pointed last year. Now, John is the president of Closed End Fund Advisors in Richmond, Virginia, which is online at cefadvisors.com. And we're digging into the firm's research, which you can do for yourself at cefdata.com. John was here last week, and he was giving his forecast for 2025. And he did that first rather than reviewing 2024 because he likes to be efficient with the data, and he wanted to wait until he was absolutely sure how 2024 had played out. So if you missed what he was saying about his expectations for 2025, go back and listen to The Navigator last week. Now, however, we're going to look back at what he saw happening in 2024 and see where things turned out right, which is pretty much all of them, or wrong. If you want to get more information, again, cefadvisors.com. John is also the chairman of the Active Investment Company Alliance, which is online at aicalliance.org if you're looking for more information on closed-end fund investing. John Colescott, Happy New Year. Welcome back to The Navigator.
It's always good to be here, Chuck, and Happy New Year to you as well.
Let's jump right in, because you made a number of predictions last year. Basically, there were 8 predictions, although a few of them had a few different tentacles. So let's dig in, starting with your first one, which was that you thought that the 15 sector index would beat the S&P 500 equal weight. And that one worked out for you.
It did. So our 15 sector index, which is only 24% U.S. common stocks and definitely not overweight large cap growth, did 19.5% through New Year's Eve total return. A large part of that was a 6.7% discount narrowing. And there was a discount high on December 9th, and it did a bit of a pullback into the year, which is partially why we waited to do this final report. But really, you know, just 1% pullback in the last 3 weeks. And RSP, which is the ETF that covers that index, was only up just under 13% on the year. So I call that an easy win.
Absolutely. That one was a pretty easy win. But your second forecast involved yields. I'll let you explain how it turned out.
Yeah, so because of activism and defensive posturing by the funds, we chose to forecast that we thought there would be above average fake yields, which means yields that weren't based on economic return of credit and net investment income or total return from equity funds. And the best way to make that answer, in our opinion, is we looked at the leverage adjusted NAV yield of this index, which backs out discounts and leverage. It was 7.5% last New Year's Eve. And this New Year's Eve in 2024, it was 8.5%. That's 13% more, which tells me a lot more aggressive over distribution of performance to shareholders every month or quarter. And the other way to look at it was that return of capital numbers were relatively similar on a one-year basis, just under 42% in 23, just above 40% in 24. But the destructive return of capital we calculated was about 4 points higher in 24, which tells us that the NAV performance is not feeling the over return of capital. So I would say that's relatively a solid win, because discounts have narrowed and distributions have stayed higher, not because of credit results or just economic results of the manager.
That's right. So first two out of the box, working for you. Your third look ahead last year was about the January effect. You thought we would have one, but that it would be muted. Explain how it turned out for you.
We look at the average January effect, and it's historically been on average of 2.6%. We've had it 8 of the last 10 years at CEF data. And, you know, the lowest it's been really has been 1.5% if it happened. And this year it was 2.3%. So while it was above the lowest, it was below the average. And I would call that muted, though maybe moderately muted, not fully muted.
So another one on the right scale here. You've been 3 for 3. One of the things you have to look at if you're in the closed-end fund space and you're looking at the year ahead is discounts, and those worked out pretty well for you too.
Yeah, so at New Year's Eve last year, the average discount for the index was -7.1. Not just us, many firms were talking about how exceptionally wide that was. Historically speaking, we basically went to +0.06% New Year's Eve, which is within maybe 10 basis points of where they were on 12/31/21, which really means we had a full recovery. I had actually called for like a halfway recovery. We got more recovery than expected. It's the right way to be wrong if you're going to be wrong about these things. And we really did look that bond discounts would narrow more than equity. And we did find that to be true. The equity funds went from like basically a 12 discount to 7.8 of +4%, give or take. The taxable bond index went from -6 and change to -1 and change, a +5. And the muni bond index went from up 4.5% on the year. And the NAV was only up 2% total return. And if we had done it 3/4 of the year, if discounts were 3.5% during the fourth quarter. So munis had a blowout for 9 months and then pulled back, but still did above equity. So we were right that bonds would rule the year for closed-end funds as a group.
And now 4/4, the activism front, another key area for you.
Yeah, we really wanted to highlight that we thought there'd be more tenders in the universe. And so we looked at 22, there were 11 tenders, about $250 million. In 23, there were 13 tenders at $417 million. And in 24, there was 44 tenders at $3.2 billion. So definitely more capital returned to shareholders. And we looked at share redemptions, you know, really buying back stock, which is another common thing closed funds do. It was just under $1 billion in 22, just over $1 billion in 23, and almost $2 billion in 24. To me, that's more defensive stature of the fund sponsors trying to narrow discounts. And there were 24 mergers this year. That's not a huge number of funds involved, but it's still, that was an active part of funds reorganizing and trying to trade better in the market. The last thing we talked about was the management fee reduction. The year-end management fee was roughly 1.19%. At the end of this year, it was 1.09%. That's about an 8% reduction. It may sound small on basis points, but 8% is a fair amount to lower your fees in a given year.
So we lumped activism together, but it was tenders, share redemptions, mergers, and fee reductions. And if we had to break them out, it would be... Yeah. One win or four wins, any way you cut it, you're on a streak. Then we got to where you said we would see outperformance in infrastructure, covered calls, muni bonds, and multi-sector bond funds.
Yes, and sadly, infrastructure underperformed, covered calls outperformed, munis underperformed, but multi-sector outperformed. So basically, that side was flat.
So it was half and half. That's the bad side. And then, of course... is the good side. So yeah, your split decision for underperformance, you said it would be high yield convertibles and real estate funds.
And yes, high yield underperformed, convertibles did not. They're one of the better performing at almost 22% this year, but REIT real assets also underperformed. So again, a slight edge in our favor, but I'd call that basically a neutral to slightly correct. Our crystal ball was a lot worse on sectors than it was on structure.
If we were trying to be generous, we would say you got 4 out of 7. That would be a win. However, the fact is that in that win, there were 3 in which... So yeah, it's no better than a draw, I think. I think you expect your performance to be better than that. Your correct. 7th area of forecast was your outlook for BDCs.
And again, it's such a phenomenal 23. The words that we chose were a tricky 24. And muted dividend growth as we expected them to hold their reserves for eventual problems, you know, higher cost of leverage, lower, you know, non-accruals, writing down fair market values. So it's still a good year. BDCs are up 10% on the year. Nobody should be sad about 10% in a credit fund. The dividend growth was literally 0.2% for the index versus last year, 30%. I think we got that relatively correct.
I think so too, which leaves us with just one area. And again, it's one area, so we can score it as a group, or we could look at individuals because you always pick 5 funds for the end of the year, and you pick 5, and although I know you don't consider them all winners, they were all up at least double digits, so they couldn't have been too bad.
And so the first one was DIAX. It's a Dow Jones covers call style fund. It was up 16.5% on the year, but still about 4% behind a peer group average, because peer groups have a lot of S&P 500 oriented funds that are did much better, but was not our call. We had in the infrastructure space, ASGI. It was up 10 and low change percent in 24, but about 7% behind its peer group average. But to be fair, it's a less homogenous peer group. And so that's, you know, just sometimes the way it works in peer group analysis. We had a nice senior loan fund, BGB by Blackstone. It was up almost 19% on the year, which was 2% more than the peer group average. And then we had the muni fund RFMZ, which is up 10% total return of the year, which is 4% and change over the peer group average. So very pleased with that. And then there's BCSF, a BDC. It was up almost 30% in 24, 18% over the peer group average we just talked about. And I did check the previous 2 years. Those 2 years, the BDC pick did very well as well. We never recommend only owning one BDC, but we are happy so far. We picked one outperformer 3 years in a row. We're hope for a fourth next year. On average, it was 12% over the peer group. And basically, two-thirds were credit funds when the equity markets were on a fire.
Again, you can't argue much with 12% plus on average. And of the five, three of them finishing on the right side of their peer group average as well. Again, if I wanted to be picky, I could play your wins and your losses. But overall, so John, a stellar year. Like, this is not bad if you can play that many bells and that few buzzers. We hope, of course, you're going to do as well in 2025, but we'll be watching. And I know we'll be talking with you as we see things play out. So thanks so much for joining us. Thanks so much for being willing not only to make your picks, but to stand up behind them and talk about how they turned out, warts and all, which in this case, not too many barnacles on these ones.
No, an above average year. We hope for a similar next year. Our clients would all be happy.
Great stuff, John. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Cheers.
The Navigator is a joint production of the Active Investment Company Alliance and Money Life with Chuck Jaffe. And yeah, I'm Chuck Jaffe. And you can learn more about my show and me by going to moneylifeshow.com or by searching for the show wherever you find your favorite podcasts. If you want to find your favorite closed-end funds and business development companies, you might want to go to AICAlliance.org. That's the website for the Active Investment Company Alliance. And if you have questions about closed-end fund investing, send them to the Navigator at AICAlliance.org. Thanks to my guest, John Cole Scott. He's the chairman of the Active Investment Company Alliance, and he's the president of Closed End Fund Advisors in Richmond, Virginia. The firm is online at cefadvisors.com, and you can dig into their data at cefdata.com. John's on X or Twitter at John Cole Scott. The Navigator podcast is available every Friday. Make sure you don't miss an episode by following along on your favorite podcast app. We're back with more Closed End Fund next week, and until then, happy investing.